Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Market moving insight and analysis. Join Jim Cramer, David Faber, and me, Carl Quintanilla, on the opening bell hour of CNBC Squawk on the Street. Very big lineup today. This hour alone, you'll hear from the CEOs of Boeing, AMD, Starbucks, and Spotify. Good Wednesday morning. Welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm Carl Quintanilla with Jim Cramer and David Faber. Dow futures are a bit soft as we work our way through this storm of earnings. Got a Fed decision this afternoon, a presidential address tonight. But Jim, it really comes down to what you are now calling this gauntlet, this 72-hour gauntlet of earnings that we're in.
Yeah, look, it's foolish what the companies are doing, that they're reporting at the same time. They don't need to do that. But the gauntlet yesterday was positive. The overall ones were good. Today it's more mixed. And I think that what's really strange, and we're going to get to it very quickly, is some of the mixed ones are actually quite good. I see no reason whatsoever that Microsoft's down other than people just want to take profits. Starbucks, we're going to kick around when we speak to Kevin Johnson. If Boeing trades down on absolutely nothing, then that's just another Dow stock that is just indicating, well, you know what, we're just going to take some things down on based on nothing. The only thing that I saw was really of interest, David, was Pinterest, of all places, because they did the pull-through comments that we saw with Netflix. And so there is a COVID, there are COVID distinctions being made, but I think Visa trumps that. We never talk about Visa.
No, now, rarely.
And yet that's the biggest of all, other than Microsoft and Google.
Yes, enormous market value.
And out of nowhere, it was fantastic. And I insist on talking about it, if only just because I tire of a company that really has a great read on the world where the numbers were spectacular.
I'm glad you do, because you're right. Sometimes we overlook it at a $500 billion, let's call it, market value. It is one of the largest companies in the country.
It's not what we focus on. Obviously, we want to focus on FANG names.
And, yes.
Alphabet was extraordinary.
Wasn't it?
Remember the days we used to speak about TAC?
Yes.
Well, now we speak about YouTube and we speak about cloud. Look, it was a remarkable quarter. It was far better than people realize. The only thing that's strange is we had no upgrades. And I think without upgrades, you're going to go up to a certain point.
Yeah.
And then you're going to stall. So I do like it very much. But if you look at a stock like yesterday, like UPS, there was massive upgrades. And that's why that one really defied gravity.
You know, Jim and Carl, sometimes it is worth taking a step back, though, just at looking at the pure size and cash flow generative characteristics of Microsoft and Alphabet.
Yeah.
And obviously Apple still to come, which always amazes just with the sheer size of its numbers. But these, Jim, I mean, I can remember years ago when Citigroup did a $5 billion quarterly operating profit. I think it was Sandy Wild days. I can remember when ExxonMobil did $10 billion and being, wow, we are now routinely seeing numbers of the likes. I mean, operating cash flow at Alphabet of $19.7 billion, free cash flow of $13.3 billion in the quarter.
Magic.
They generated $50.7 billion in free cash flow in the last 12 months. As for Microsoft, very similar numbers. Interesting, right? Operating income, $17 billion, up 31%, $17.7 billion in commercial cloud revenue. But again, these numbers, Jim, sometimes it's worth just remarking on the sheer size of them and the power, frankly, of these businesses, which is why they are under scrutiny.
Right. Also, there is an element of humility and humanity to these quarters, Carl. You'll have someone whom we all have come to respect, Ruth Porat, the CFO of Alphabet. And she says, we are very pleased with the quarter. Very pleased with what may be one of the single greatest quarters I've ever seen. There's no hubris here. Carl, they're just doing things right. YouTube is suddenly a major profit center. I mean, gigantic.
A billion hours of video watched every day on YouTube.
And
they've started this direct response business.
It's working.
That is generating real profit.
And Google Cloud, Carl, you have three. You really do have three cloud companies now. I didn't believe it. Ruth told me for a while that Google Cloud would be significant. I dismissed it because it was Amazon Web Services and Microsoft Azure. By the way, Azure, can we stop kidding ourselves? The numbers were amazing. And anyone who wants to nitpick with Azure, just join me on Mad Money today. I'm going to clobber. I'm going to take a 2x4 to your head. But I just think that these are amazing quarters. But Alphabet is a company that is the old days, we would nitpick other bets they would have, and we would say, oh, man, that is so foolish. What are they doing wasting money there? They're not anymore. Ruth is extraordinary. I know there's lots of people involved, and I tend to cite her.
You tend to personalize a lot of times around companies with the CEO or the CFO.
Well, I came into Bar San Miguel, and she was once having a beer at my place.
Well, there you go.
And I said, you look just like Ruth Porat. Because I am. I wanted to check it out.
That's the reason alone.
Well, yeah. Right?
Operating expenses only up 4%.
Did you know that the OPEX was down dramatically? I mean, how can you make so much money, David, and not have a cost of goods go up? How is that possible?
It's working.
It's magic.
Right now. Yeah. Microsoft too, Carl. 1% margin saving actually from COVID-related savings. I thought that was interesting. That's people not getting on airplanes.
Oh, you're so focused on that.
I'm interested to hear your defense of Azure, because 46 is a great number, but it's not the 47 or 48 of prior quarters. And it sort of makes people wonder today, what number do you need to post to get a Google-like response? Do you need to beat advertising revenue by $2 billion? You need to beat services by several billion dollars in the unit alone? That's apparently what gets your stock up that day.
Well, I know that Azure, you could argue, law of large numbers. I am urging people to listen to the words of Amy Hood, who is, again, one of the great CFOs of our era. And her she pretty much gives a rattle down of why we should be liking the stock. And I just thought that it was just a superb quarter. Class of its own, says Barclays. I completely agree with that. Big target boost in Cowen, J.P. Morgan. J.P. Morgan, startup-like bookings. Startup-like bookings. This is a huge company, and it's like a startup. David, we do not see this kind of growth. We've always been told this kind of growth is just simply not possible. Morgan Stanley, the case for buying more Microsoft, the prosecution rests.
What is that? Azure Power Global Ltd. What the heck was that?
But you know, that
chart was up for like 30 seconds. I was like, what are they doing?
What in the world was that? But we've been talking about cloud for a really long time. I think the most important thing that you've just said is now you believe that Google is truly a firm competitor in this arena. And
yes,
to Carl's question,
Thomas Curry,
is it starting to take a little bit of share from Microsoft and or maybe a couple of points out of its growth rate?
Well, they would tell you yes, and that's the slowdown in Azure. They've been winning some business. I just refuse to call that a slowdown. I just can't. There's plenty of business. Carl, the cloud, I know these executives come on and they say it's in its infancy. I'm beginning to believe it's in its infancy. I mean, you just don't have this kind of growth. Thomas Curry came to Google and said to me that he was going to make Google into a cloud force. It was so easily dismissed. Well, that was a mistake. He's doing great. But YouTube is amazing. I don't think people realize that YouTube is incredibly watched and makes a fortune.
Yes, yes.
Because how much does their content cost to create versus Netflix, David?
Very, very little. I mean, it costs, very little.
Very, very little.
There is some acquisition.
Yeah, we've got it.
It's not much.
We've got a good piece on .com today that at their current growth rate, YouTube will have Netflix-like revenue or more by the end of the year.
Do people
when we
work,
come back,
Carl?
A huge hour
work?
Ahead, as we said.
Nobody works, Carl. They just watch. They watch TV.
No. Right. Dream S&P, Jim. You gotta look at some of the stuff that kids are watching these days.
Right.
Starbucks CEO Kevin Johnson's up next, plus Spotify's Daniel Ek. We'll talk about his Arsenal ambitions. Hear what he said about throwing his hat in the ring to purchase that European football club. The opening bell coming up in about 20 minutes.
One in eight. That's how many people have worked at a McDonald's. Who'll serve millions the best Big Mac and best birthday party they've ever had. Who haven't just seen kids graduate from a Happy Meal, but have gotten help graduating themselves. Because they know the skills learned here.
Bienvenidos. Welcome to English Under the Arches.
Can help you grow from here or keep growing here.
Hi, welcome to
One in eight start at McDonald's. And where you start stays with you.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration,
Our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Boeing shares look to open down about 1.5% this morning. Let's get to Phil LeBeau, who joins us with CEO Dave Calhoun. Hey, Phil.
Thank you, Carl. Let's bring in Dave. Dave, let's talk about the quarter. A sixth straight quarterly loss. $1.53 a share was the loss, worse than the street was expecting. But you put out a memo to your employees as soon as the numbers came out, and you said in that memo you believe that this is an inflection point. 2021 is an inflection point. Why do you believe that, and why do you think that you are, and I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but starting to turn the corner here?
Yeah. Well, Phil, first, it's good to be with you. I do feel it's an inflection point for a lot of reasons. First and foremost, the way the industry came together with the government to keep the industry alive and well for when a recovery eventually returns, I think will play out in the months ahead. Because I believe, at least in this country, in the United States and a few other domestic markets, traffic really is ready to burst back. And our customers are busy getting ready for it. We are getting ready to support them in every way that we can. And that is right in front of us. Secondly, as you may know, for the last 18 months and for the next 12 months, liquidity is the metric we care the most about, cash flow, getting back to cash flow positive. And first quarter for us, despite a big shortfall in 787 deliveries in Q1, we're still slightly ahead of the track that we had planned, which is, as you know, have us getting back to cash flow positive in 2022. So there are a lot of reasons why these vectors are moving in the right direction. It's always slower than anyone would like, but I am very optimistic.
Dave, how worried are you about what we're seeing with the pandemic, whether you look at India, whether you look at parts of Europe? And does that make you perhaps rethink the trajectory of a recovery for those long-haul markets? Maybe push it back. Already it's delayed, but push it back even further.
Yeah, I don't believe if you look at all the epidemiology charts with respect to spikes in other countries, while this one is prolific because of the population and because of the state of the healthcare system in India, while this one looks worse and is worse, I think it'll still follow the same kind of path. And ultimately, we'll get it under control as we move out the end of this year. So I don't think it changes that long-term recovery for wide bodies or for those international routes. You know, I do worry for India, our company, and I hope the country does everything in their power to support India at this moment with supplies, et cetera. It's a big deal, and I think this will have a very deep and lasting effect on domestic travel in India. So we do watch that.
Dave, what's going on with the 737 MAX? You guys, a couple of weeks ago, put out essentially telling your customers a notice saying, don't fly this. We've got some electrical issues in the flight deck. We will have a repair so you can identify it, make the fix, and it should only be a matter of a couple of days. Now, that was a couple of weeks ago, and you have yet to put in the fix plan with the FAA for how the situation can be identified and repaired. How much longer before the airlines, and we're talking about Southwest, American, United, and others, will be able to fly the MAX again?
Well, let me start by saying it's more than a little disappointing when things like this happen and our customers can't put our lift to work. And so we're in close contact with them every step of the way. The 3 to 4 day fix recovery timeframe, that relates to the work itself with respect to when a bulletin is approved by the FAA in concert with Boeing and distributed to the field. And then that work will begin. We still believe that that's in relatively short order, although I will not predict when the FAA is through with its interrogation of the bulletins themselves. It is a constructive dialogue going on. It's a pretty simple and straightforward problem and then therefore fixed. So anyway, I'm confident we'll get there. And most importantly, we have to try to get to meet the timelines with respect to summer recoveries, which our U.S. Airlines in particular are focused on.
Dave, Jim, first, congratulations on the extension of your CEO contract, which is terrific.
Hi, Jim. Thank you.
China. I listened to Phil earlier talk about how it's been 3 years a drought. I find China really important for Boeing. But when I listen to the conference call so far, for instance, when I listen to Raytheon, China's important. Why? Because we're bulking up our defense in order to be able to save Taiwan if it comes to that. The rhetoric from China and from our country about China is so poor, even worse, I think, to some degree than the Trump era, that I just think it's inconceivable you can get orders. And yet they need airplanes. What can you do as a CEO to make it so you get China orders in this perilous time?
Well, number one, and Jim, your finger's on the right issue with respect to the longer term, the future of our aerospace industry here in the United States with respect to commercial air travel. We are a leader in the world. China represents 25% of the global growth in our trade. And so it's very important that we stay involved and that we continue to support China with the airlift that we've been supporting them with. I will advocate as a CEO. I will advocate to to our administration currently. I know they're in a sort of a difficult moment with China. I am a believer that we will all come through this moment, and that trade will be a big part of that. This represents a lot of U.S. jobs. It's an entire industry sector that will depend on us getting back on track with China and trade. It's a big part of the marketplace. I do not want to not participate in that. It would not bode well for our industry.
Dave, let me follow up on that with this question. If you do not get a sizable order from China, let's say within the next 6 months, and they are still dragging their feet or taking their time, let's say, recertifying the 737 MAX, will you have to change your production schedules for either the MAX or the 787 this year?
Yeah, I don't think so. Remember, our production schedules in light of the impact of COVID, we took down almost to bare minimums. One, so that we could deplete the inventories that we have created, first because of the MAX issue in and of itself, and then secondly because of the 8-7 delay in the first quarter. So we're going to continue to deplete those inventories, keep our production rates steady, stable. We will be transparent with our supply chain. This is really a question of recovery. It's really a question of recovery of those production rates and then that march forward. And it's mostly a medium-term outlook with respect to those rates. So taking them down, I don't think so. Taking them up and at what rate, that's where this matters.
Dave Calhoun, the CEO of Boeing. Thank you, Dave, for joining us this morning on a day, Carl, where Dave said it in his employee letter. He believes that 2021 is an inflection point as they move towards 2022 when they are projecting to have positive free cash flow. Carl, back to you.
Phil, a lot of clues pointing in that direction. I see CES going to be in person in Vegas next January. Phil, thanks for that. We want to turn to chips this morning as well, Jim. AMD's Q2 revenue guide is pretty good. Texans, not bad either, but those two names are going to go in different directions this morning.
Well, you know, Texans very interesting. I know people are sending it down, but there really wasn't any genuine weakness. I just think that the Texas Instruments happens to be what I'd say is unenthusiastic about itself for about 20 years. It's almost like I remember during the heyday of the 80s where they were so promotional. And now it's just kind of, hey, we did a good job. David, sometimes on these conference calls, there are companies that just simply refuse to play the promotional game about themselves. And I like that very much because what it says is, listen, don't get caught up. We're doing a good job, but there's no reason for you to take the stock up.
Right.
And I find that to be refreshing. And Texas Instruments is refreshing.
Yeah. And Carl, as we see, of course, AMD shares are higher, or at least looking higher. Of course, we're 10 minutes away from the open. And I know we're going to have Lisa Su joining us very shortly as well. Looking forward to that.
Yeah, we got a lot of wood to chop this morning. We'll talk to Lisa Su after a break and get the opening bell in 10 minutes. Don't go anywhere.
For more than a decade, Comcast has been committed to bridging the digital divide and connecting millions to affordable high-speed internet. But the barriers to get connected go well beyond affordability. Through Project Up, Comcast is committing $1 billion to reach millions with digital skills training, resources, and opportunities needed to succeed in a digital world. Project Up, building a future of unlimited possibilities. Learn more at Comcast.com/Project Up.
Shares of AMD are rallying. The chipmaker lifting its revenue forecast and saying its supply chain has improved and is look, this is just a true blowout. We haven't seen one of these in a long time. And joining us now, first on CNBC, AMD CEO, Dr. Lisa Su. Lisa, I have to tell you, when you see 93% revenue growth and a forecast 50% revenue growth, you just have to say, how are you doing that? Well, kind of like Azure, David.
It's one of those things.
Yes.
You do four CEO interviews in an hour. And
I can be Lisa Su. Well, you know, what we did was
Calhoun might be a little
we executed
late.
Well, and we used our roadmap, and we did a very good job and probably even took share from our competitors.
That was a tough first question for her you had there.
It was the greatest softball question.
Yeah.
I was a hanging curveball.
You really were.
Now I have to come back with something much tougher.
Well, you could just repeat it if you want.
No. I did. You've just now pantsed me, so I'm going to come in with the toughest question imaginable. Like, why did you not do 51%?
Would you like me to conduct the interview with you? Can play Lisa Su?
Let's make it like a debate, a presidential debate.
How do you do it, Jim?
I don't know. I think what we ought to do, perhaps, Carl, this is one of those instances where we ought to just keep doing many things, like talk about the incredible Brinker quarter.
Brinker? You want to go to Brinker?
Yum? We can do Brinker, Jim.
How about Yum?
I think Yum is an amazing story. Yum on a 2-year stack, Jim. Some of these numbers are bananas. Pizza up 8, taco up 10, KFC up 11. I see Restaurant Business pointed out that for Yum's four brands, they set per restaurant weekly sales records in Q1. Every single one. That's on Allen.
I mean, here's a stock that's down.
So we're eating a lot more fast food.
One of the things that was really beautiful about what happened with Yum is they are really using data. So if you go, the start of the Alphabet call is actually how Yum is using the data, particularly for a turnaround in Taco Bell. Now, Carl, this is one we all know these brands, but what we don't recognize is this is just a gigantic worldwide company other than China. And I am shocked that every single one of them, there's always been a loser, whether it be Pizza Hut one, Taco Bell another, even this Habit Burger. I've not had a Habit Burger, David. Have you?
I have not.
Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah, do you see Epicurious.com is not going to put any new recipes up that involve red meat?
Is that true?
Yeah.
Wow.
Isn't that interesting?
Beyond Meat should be doing better.
Yeah. Guys, obviously we still hope to join Lisa Su at some point. We are, though, going to also be joined.
And I apologize that I went through the mock.
Later, by Daniel Ek. And I did want to, before we get to the open 4 minutes from now, focus on Spotify because it's continued to worsen. Can I take a look? I think it could be down
sure.
as much as 8.
We look at the monthly average users.
Yeah, at this point. And you can see it right there. Yeah, it's roughly 8%. Obviously, Daniel Ek on the call continuing to talk about the fact that, you know what, we're always going to prioritize the long term over the short term.
The hedge funds hate to hear that.
Yes.
They want the short term prioritized over the long term. Well, how about someone who's prioritizing both the short and long term? Lisa Su, joining us first on CNBC. Lisa, I apologize for whatever transmission issues there were, but I got to give you, David joked about a softball question I gave you, which is that how do you do 93% year over year and how do you have 50% revenue growth? He wants something harder. So I would say, how are you able to take share in premium, ultra thin in gaming? It's hard for me to come up with something difficult, but let me give you the floor.
Hey, good morning, guys. Great to see you. Sorry about that before. Look, it was a very, very strong quarter. We're very excited about the growth that we see in the business. You know, I think what we see is across all of our businesses, whether you're talking about, high-end PCs or you're talking about gaming or consoles or data center, we're just seeing, tremendous growth, across the business. And, it's a very, very strong product portfolio and also strong market demand. So it's an exciting time.
You repeatedly mention the roadmap, and of course you give us an Italian roadmap, use those city names, the roadmap being so important. And when I listen and I look at the roadmap, what I'm thinking about is you are not thinking short term, you're not thinking out to 2023. We're talking about a 2026, 2027 plan at a minimum. Now, do you do that because you are accruing new customers, a Google, say, a Azure? Because that's what they want, a long-term commitment and a partner.
Yeah, one of the highlights of the quarter and really of the year is our data center business. The data center is really powering some of the most important services that we're all using, like these collaboration services and what large enterprises need. And, we doubled our data center business in the first quarter and see growth and acceleration as we go through the year. And it is all about roadmap, Jim. You know, we've been working on this roadmap for the last couple of years. You know our roadmap well. We have Italian names, so we went Naples to Rome to Milan to Genoa. And with each generation, customers are actually planning what they need to do together with our roadmap. And so, yeah, we're extremely excited. You know, we saw significant growth in the first quarter. We see that continuing into the second quarter, and it allowed us to raise our guidance for the full year. But it is all about roadmap. You know, today our best processor is Milan, which is our newest generation EPYC. And we're going to be on to the next generation next year with Genoa.
Well, I'm glad you brought this up, because one of the things that I saw, we had Pat Gelsinger on that late of VMware, but of course earlier Intel, and now CEO Intel. And he talked about a digestion period, which is used as, is a glut, that there's a glut of chips in the data center. I have watched every video involving your company, and to me, there is no glut. If anything, there's tremendous demand. How do we explain the disparity?
Well, I really do think this is about, plans that we've laid out over a number of quarters. So we actually saw in the fourth quarter that, there was significant demand for our data center product, had a strong, guide into the first quarter. And as we went through the quarter, we just saw people needed more products for their data center systems. And if you think about it, it's all the things that we're using, right? I mean, the fact is, we're all using, many, many more digital services, and they require, lots of cloud capability. So what we saw was actually, strength in our cloud business. And, I think it just really depends on, where our partners are in their launch cycle. So we're very excited about the momentum that we see.
Well, one of the things that I think is kind of curious is that when you go back to Gelsinger's comments, and I'm just focusing on this because there's been a long time rivalry between AMD and Intel, is he keeps talking about an intimate relationship with customers that I think are actually now your customers. Is it entirely possible that it's not about intimacy? It's about product and quality?
Well, Jim, I would say that in general, in tech, it's always about product, quality, dependability, roadmap, joint plans. We've been at this for a number of years. We've talked to you on this show a lot about our long-term strategy and the journey that we're on. We're all about putting the best product in the market. Our engineers are incredibly, incredibly focused and motivated by doing that. Our customers are asking more from us. And so, yes, you absolutely need deep customer partnerships. And we have those. And it starts with, phenomenal product and being able to, do the things that we need to do as we're advancing in this, really digital transformation of the world.
There's a very big debate right now, Lisa, about the grand reopening and whether that means that the second half will not have the demand for personal computers that the first half does. Something, by the way, that Intel highlighted as a possibility. What kind of demand trend do you see for personal computers?
Yeah, so the PC market, Jim, is, in a remarkable place. I mean, if you think about it, the recent growth that we saw last year and the growth that we're seeing this year is just very, very strong. And I think it's this trend of not just work from home, but everybody wants, better products and better computing. You want a, better video experience. You want a better computing experience. And so the demand is strong. Now, what we see is across PCs, gaming, gaming is huge across data center. We actually see that 2021 will be even stronger than what we originally thought from our business standpoint. So we were able to raise our guidance. Originally we thought we would grow 37% in 2021. We now see the opportunity to grow 50% in 2021, just on the strength of our product portfolio, as well as the market. So we feel very good about the second half. I think it's a incredibly, exciting year in terms of just all of the technology that we can bring to market, and we're working hard at it.
Now, on someone you and I both respect a great deal, Jensen Huang, on his NVIDIA call, he's really just talking about saying, listen, we're coming in with a Quantum Leap product, and pretty much everybody is far away from us, and you really were the existential threat. Look, NVIDIA is a great company, but do you see them as an existential threat to what you've got going in, data center?
You know, Jim, what I would say is we always count on a very competitive market. I mean, there are a lot of great companies out there, so no question about that. Now, when we look at our business, though, we look at computing as really, you know, the next big frontier in terms of just all the innovation that's necessary. So, you know, we've been thinking about this for years. We have a very, very strong roadmap, thinking about how we combine, you know, sort of our CPUs and our GPUs. And, you know, we're really excited about our Xilinx pending acquisition as we bring in, you know, their accelerated computing. And we're going to have just a tremendous portfolio for the data center. So I feel great about our roadmap. I think, you know, computing is more and more important as we go forward. And yes, there are, you know, lots of companies that are addressing it. But you can count on the fact that, you know, we are highly invested in this roadmap. And we're working very hard to make sure that over the next 5 years, you see incredible technology from AMD.
Lisa, just one last thing. Can you give us a sense of what you're seeing about people coming back to the office, which, of course, would therefore be CPU sales? And how much could your company benefit from a genuine reopening of the office?
Well, you know, it's a great, great point that you're making. You know, as we see the return to office, or, you know, sort of what this, you know, next phase, you know, will be, there is actually a return in enterprise spending. And as we look over the next couple of quarters, you know, we're very focused on the most strategic segments of the computing market. So, you know, we see enterprise PCs, for example, as a good growth driver. We see, you know, enterprise data center, you know, servers, that people need, as well as cloud, as key growth drivers. And so, you know, you see many of these trends actually coming together. You want great technology at home. You want better technology when you go back to work. You're going to be in a hybrid environment, so you want to be able to move back and forth between those two. And then, of course, you know, I can't leave out gaming. You know, the fact is, gaming is a great secular growth driver as well. So I think we have a lot of trends going for the need for great technology, and we want to be the partner of choice there.
Well, once again, I want to congratulate you. I know when Intel was talking, a lot of people sent down AMD to 7980, believing that you had lost share or that they were coming in with gangbusters. I wish them the best of luck, but their product is a little late, day late and a dollar short. Lisa Su, AMD, unbelievable job. Great to talk to you again.
Thanks. Great seeing you guys. Take care.
Thank you. Carl?
Jim, great discussion, especially about the reopening. And it does remind me, I want to squeeze in here amid all these earnings, this call from Goldman this morning on oil. Jeff Currie says that the next 6 months are going to bring the biggest jump in oil demand that we've ever seen, 50% larger than the second largest back in 2000. And they see crude going to 80, commodities up another 13.
Well, I know that EV, electronic vehicles, still not here. I'm going to hear from Ford on Mad Money later tonight. I think they're going to talk about competition, but it's still nowhere. It's still only just 3%. And I could understand. I disagree with that forecast. I think that if it ever got to that level, the Saudis would flood it. They don't want United States back in, and $80 puts the United States back in a big way. David, you know that the Saudis are in charge of oil right now, not the market.
Yeah, interesting as well, that journal piece that they may sell another little slice of Saudi Aramco. But, you know, Jim, it's interesting when you look at energy equities, they have severely trailed the move in the commodity.
Yes, they have.
Of late.
Yes, they have. And maybe we'll find something out at the end of the week when Chevron and Exxon report. And Mike Wirth has always been pretty good at giving you a forecast. But yet the stocks are...
Yeah, after a very strong run, particularly Exxon in the first couple of months of the year, actually starting... in the latter part of 2020, they have underperformed, so to speak, at least, well, the commodity.
BP had a blowout yesterday. Stock barely moved.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Carl?
Guys, speaking of reopenings, Starbucks beats by 9 cents with adjusted 62 cents a share. Revenue was a little shy due to what we now know are obvious points of weakness around the world. Starbucks president and CEO Kevin Johnson joins us this morning in another First on CNBC interview. Kevin, good morning. Great to see you.
Good morning, Carl. How are you this morning?
Pretty good. We're grateful for the time. I mentioned that international weakness. I mean, there obviously are some difficult spots who are still grappling with reopening and the pandemic. But what specifically did you find worrisome ex-U.S.?
Well, if you look at this last quarter, it was a solid quarter, and it really demonstrates that vaccinations are the unlock for what we call the great human reconnection. And we saw that unfold across the United States. Now, certainly, as you point out, you know, Europe had some outbreaks, and much of Europe was in lockdown through parts of this last quarter. And we even saw some COVID restrictions in China, where they restricted non-essential travel throughout the Chinese New Year. So that put a little bit of headwind. But overall, we had a great quarter. We had a strong beat in earnings per share, as you highlighted. And we've raised our guidance, our full year guidance for revenue, for earnings per share, and for operating margin. So very positive signs. But the unlock is getting vaccine, getting shots in arms. And if you look at what happened in the U.S., that's exactly what unfolded. The great human reconnection has begun.
The guidance outlook, you're right, on those metrics is stronger. It has some on the street wondering, at what point would you be willing to boost some guidance on comps themselves?
Well, you know, we guided, you know, pretty strong comps and a wide range of comps for this year. And, you know, we're sticking to that. You know, clearly to deliver on this revenue guidance, it's going to be at the higher end of the comp range that we've given. But I think we've got very solid evidence. If you just look at the United States, you know, the United States posted, you know, I think a 9% year-on-year comp. And we even commented we exited the quarter with an 11% two-year comp. So think about that. 11% two-year comp growth over FY19 is kind of like a 5 comp and a 6 comp. And so you look at what's happened. We're just seeing that momentum build in the U.S. And as vaccinations take place around the world, we're seeing the same phenomenon happen. So we're pretty optimistic about the back half of this calendar year, or fiscal year.
Yeah, Kevin, always good to have you on the show in good and bad times. Yep. Mostly good, because that's how well Starbucks has done. When you look at that stock. To me, I just accept that it's profit-taking. But I want to drill down on something. You talked about artificial intelligence. It really is a way to be able to predict the connection. And your Starbucks reward is program is terrific, but I want to call out Panera, 40 million members, okay, for their for their rewards. Ulta, 32 million members. Chipotle just started 2 years ago. They already have more than 20 million members. Why does Starbucks only have just 22.9 million members?
Well, Jim, keep in mind what we report is 90-day active members. And so these are customers that in the last 90 days are actively engaging in Starbucks rewards. And so, you know, you got to benchmark it versus that. But if you look at, you know, we grew Starbucks rewards customers roughly 18% year on year, and we've grown them 19% in the U.S. just in the last 6 months to 22.9 million. So as you said, we're at about 23 million. I did comment on the call yesterday evening that, you know, when I talk to our team, I have this aspiration that we can double that number. Now, I don't know, you know, it might take a couple of years to do that, but it's just a matter of using machine learning and artificial intelligence to get better line of sight to those unknown customers so that we can market to them and reach out to them with personalized offers and personalize their experience and bring them into the rewards program. That is a great opportunity for upside for Starbucks over the next few years.
Kevin, it's David. You know, I always like to ask you about China, and I will continue that. I think you hit 5,000 stores very recently in the country. Mobile order sales mix there, 34% of your sales are mobile orders in China. I mean, is there a point at which it's like, okay, that's enough, or does that keep going higher?
Well, you know, I think that's going to keep going higher. You know, you even look at the percent of spend in our stores, both in the U.S. and China, that is from our rewards customers and paid on that mobile app. You know, you think about ordering. It's the safest, easiest, most personalized way to place your Starbucks order. So I think that number is going to keep going up. And, you know, as that goes up, that allows us to really elevate and improve the customer experience in our stores. And so I anticipate that number is going to keep growing. In China, you know, a significant portion of it is delivery as well. So it's a combination of, you know, customers, you know, want to have effortless experiences that fit their lifestyle. And a lot of them in China want to have that coffee ordered and delivered right to them.
And what about store growth back here in the U.S.? Particularly, you know, there are obviously neighborhood Starbucks that I would assume are doing quite well, but those in downtown areas have to still be suffering greatly. What are your expectations there, given we are still only seeing 15-20% of workers typically come back in an office building, for example, on a daily basis?
Well, you know, that's a key metric to watch, David. I think that, you know, in downtown, you know, office-based locations, you know, we still see some softness. We're seeing recovery, but the bulk of the recovery is happening in sort of those non-downtown, non-urban stores that typically are cafes with drive-throughs. And two things. Number one, our trade area transformation. We are repositioning stores in those downtown markets with new formats and new locations. And, you know, we announced this like about in June last year. So in the last 9 months, we've completed about 70% of the closures. And of those closures, we've repositioned already about a third of those stores. And so great progress there. I anticipate this fall, we're going to start seeing businesses, you know, sort of have their workforce start to work back in the office again. You know, that's what we're planning for Starbucks. In our support center here in Seattle, we just told our partners, look, plan to keep working from home until October. And so I anticipate this fall, we're going to see, you know, that renaissance and that transformation in downtown markets. And that's going to just further accelerate the recovery and the growth of Starbucks.
All right. Well, you know, go Kevin, ahead, Carl. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, Kevin, you know, the viewers might not know, you've got a pretty well-rounded AI program that I read last night is looking into actual vaccine progress. I don't know if it's just in the U.S. or around the world, but can you talk about that briefly and what kind of intelligence it's giving you?
Yeah, well, here's kind of how that came to be. You know, I was sort of tracking when the FDA announced emergency authorization for the Pfizer vaccine, for Moderna, for J&J, I was sort of tracking at the time of those announcements what was happening in our stores, and you start to see an uptick. Then as we got into the vaccination program, once the U.S. started hitting about 3 million to 4 million vaccines a day, we saw an even greater uptick. And so what I've asked our Deep Brew team to do is to do the analytics to start to correlate as vaccine and vaccinations roll out, what can we anticipate in terms of customer mobility and traffic in our stores? And so Deep Brew now is using that machine learning to track that in every country around the world. What that's giving us is indications of how customer mobility is unfolding, how that will show up in our stores. And that's allowing us to plan for everything around staffing in our stores, supply chain, all of the things to ensure we create a great experience as customers, you know, begin to connect and begin to come to Starbucks.
Kevin, sometimes when I see a stock down 3 or a high quality company, I want to search around what might be wrong. And I know that David mentioned about downtowns. You've got the trade area transformation program, and you did say you're only 70% complete. I wonder if that's one of the things that people are saying, well, why aren't you quicker on this change in America?
Well, that's a great question. You know, a lot of this says, how are we repositioning 800 stores? And we've already, you know, repositioned about 600 of those stores. The final 200, Jim, the majority of those are in malls. And, you know, those will happen in the next 6 months. And the reason that we slowed down on those is we're just waiting for some leases to terminate and get to the point where we can make that transition easier. So, you know, I think when it comes to the downtown store locations, that's where we fundamentally have moved quickly, and we're in a very good position there. So I think, you know, much of the remaining stores we have to reposition are mall-based stores that we think are going to transition to other formats and other locations.
Kevin, as always, great color and texture around the print, and we always are grateful. Thanks again.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Kevin Johnson of Starbucks. When we come back, as David said earlier, Spotify's Daniel Ek's going to join us on the quarter on this European soccer ambition after the break. But first, take a look at how treasuries are faring ahead of the Fed's post-meeting statement due this afternoon. Take a look at yields. As for the Dow, getting a drag of almost 200 points from Amgen, Microsoft, and Boeing alone. We're back in a minute.
All right, we got to drill down on this. Spotify shares are under pressure this morning after reporting first quarter results that I think a lot of people say look darn good. So joining us now is Daniel Ek. He's the founder, chairman, and CEO of Spotify. Daniel, I love it when you come on the show because you can explain what's really going on because your stock has often rallied after initial decline. So let's go right to it. I can see there's a reaction to the monthly average users being down, and so are your free users. So why are they down, and why does it matter?
Yeah, well, thanks for having me again, Jim. I think overall, like, we had a very solid first quarter. Subs at the top end of the range, revenue at the top end of the range, and, of course, our gross margin as well at the top end of the range. But as you said, MU's a little bit softer. I think it really comes down to a very, very strong and solid 2020. And, of course, as I outlined in my opening remarks as well on the earnings call, we are in a sort of recovery of COVID. And we're at various stages around the world. So some of the markets where we experienced usually a lot of growth are now still very much in that COVID recovery process.
Well, at the same time, we can talk about some price increases here. You can't usually put them through unless you're confident. I find, and I often talk with Carl and David, Spotify's a bill you have to pay. It looks like the United States and UK, you agree with me.
Oh, for sure. And, you know, we started doing that about 2-3 quarters ago. I talked about adding another leg to the stool, and the early results that we saw then was very encouraged, and that's obviously continued, and it's on the back of that that we felt comfortable rolling it out in more markets. And I'm just very, very encouraged by the result that we're seeing across the board on engagement, and the Spotify users are getting a fantastic value for their money.
Well, let's talk about the value, because it seems like you are aggressively courting creators. And to not talk about podcasts is ridiculous. Your podcast business is exploding, isn't it?
Oh, it is for sure, Jim. So we've been growing the past few years from 5 million creators to 7 million creators, and this year 8 million creators, and it's growing very, very rapidly. And in the next few years, we think as many as 50 million creators will be on the Spotify platform. And that obviously means that they'll create more engaging content, which means more users will come on. And then the more users will come on, the more great creators will come on as well. So it's a real flywheel in the making.
Daniel, it's David. I well remember the day you joined us at the NYSE when you talked about podcasting as a strategic imperative for the company. I wonder, though, when I look at the company, in terms of what you pay the labels as a percent of revenue, that's still overall revenue, isn't it? In other words, you haven't been able to separate revenue from podcasting from revenue from music. Is that something you will be able to do at some point?
Yeah. So we have two totally different revenue streams for podcasters and for music. The gross margin profile for podcasting obviously is a bit different. We're still very much in the investment phase in our podcasting stage, but over time I expect them to be a little bit better than we have on the music side. So that's obviously going to contribute to a much better story over time for Spotify.
Daniel, Joe Rogan's obviously a huge influencer. What he said about vaccines and younger people continues to make news. What's the ready response to that? And how difficult is it to remain, I guess, agnostic about his comments regarding a vaccine when we know how important it is for countries to get their populations vaccinated?
Yeah, I mean, I can't speak to what any one creator is talking about on the platform. We have 8 million creators and hundreds of millions of pieces of content. So we have a content policy on Spotify, and we consistently applies it across the board, no matter if it's Joe Rogan or any one of our other creators.
All right, Daniel, I'm a big fan of Spotify, but I'm also a big fan of Arsenal turning around. And it's a franchise that is storied. And I just want to know right now, how much do you want it and can you get it?
Well, you know, Jim, I've been an Arsenal fan since I was 8 years old. Arsenal is my team. I love the history. I love the players. And of course, I love the fans. So as I look at that, I just see a tremendous opportunity to set a real vision for the club to bring it back to its glory. And I want to establish trust with fans, and I want to engage the fans again. So to answer your question, I'm very serious. I have secured the funds for it, and I want to bring what I think is a very compelling offer to the owners, and I hope they hear me out.
Daniel, they don't seem to be interested in selling, though. And unlike a public company where there's other things you can do to conceivably pressure them, here I suppose it's only the fan base. But, you know, they've made it clear we're not sellers.
Yeah, but, you know, as I started out saying, I've been a fan for 30 years of this club, and I certainly didn't expect that this would happen overnight, and I'm prepared that this could be a long journey. But, you know, all I can do is prepare what I think is a very thoughtful offer and bring it to them and hope they hear me out.
Well, one of the things that they're saying is that they're not interested. That, to me, sounds like an opening offer. You have a lot of cash. You are the fan owner. Everyone wants to see an owner who identifies with the fans. I don't want to slam the Kroenkes too much, but they own a lot of teams, and it seems like this is just some asset for them and nothing real particular. Doesn't that gall you? Doesn't that make you feel angry?
Well, you know, I just focus on the club. I focus on the fans, and I focus on trying to bring the club back to glory. And as you said, I'm first and foremost a fan. That's the most important thing for me, and I want the club to do better. That's my primary interest.
All right, speaking of glory, let's get back to Spotify for a moment. Daniel, are you still sticking with long-term getting to margins of between 30 and 40%? Is that still realistic for this company?
Absolutely so. So I think the broader story here that I think is worth pointing out, like, we started as a music company. We then set out to be an audio company. But more than that, it's started as a streaming service, and it's really becoming an audio platform. And when you think about that audio platform, we're now creating tools for better creation, better distribution, better engagement, and better monetization. And that's going to bring revenue opportunities across all four of these categories. And some of them are going to be very high margin businesses for us. Some of them are, of course, lower margin businesses. But overall, I definitely think it's realistic to be in the mid-30s on the gross margin side.
So, Daniel, App reports tonight. You're fighting a battle with them in Europe regarding anti-competitive behavior. Is it time to bury the hatchet?
Well, you know, all we're fighting for really is having a level playing field, having an open platform that allows us to talk to customers and to allows us to innovate on the same premise that everyone else on the platform does, including Apple. That's what we're focused on. That's what we're excited about. And that's also, by the way, when we announced our paid offering for creators yesterday, that we focused on as well. We're bringing forward a very, very compelling offering to creators where they can communicate to their customers on their terms. They can set the pricing. And it's a very, very good opportunity for creators right now on the Spotify platform.
Well, that sounds like that there's no peace offering coming. A statement of objection is likely coming instead.
You know, I don't know what the European Union will do, but obviously we're very encouraged with all the dialogues we're having with regulators around the world, and I hope that we have a level playing field, and that's what we're fighting for.
All right. Thank you so much to Daniel Ek. And I know it's I care about the Spotify price, but I think that the Arsenal conversation,
it seems
Daniel,
to be.
It seems to dominate.
It's dominating right now. Because we didn't even talk about the Super League.
People want you to own that franchise, Daniel.
Well, thank you, guys. Well, thank you again for having me. It's always fun to be on here. And yeah, we're super excited about the future here at Spotify, and we're excited about the early innings of what is a tremendous growth story in audio.
Thank you so much, Daniel, executive CEO of Spotify. Carl, exciting show today.
Yeah, indeed. We got through a lot, Jim. We've got an S&P record high while we were talking to Daniel. As we said earlier, Dow still being dragged down a bit by Microsoft, Amgen, and Boeing. Jim, you'll have a lot to kick around tonight, including Ford, right?
Yeah, it's a slow show. I've got Salesforce. I've got Yum. I have Stanley Black & Decker, and I have Ford. And I wish I could bring it, but that's best I can do, Carl.
All right. Okay. Do better. Do better next time, yeah, Jim. Yeah. We'll see you tonight, 6 p.m. Eastern time. Of course, Mad Money with Jim Cramer.
You've been listening to The Opening Bell on CNBC's Squawk on the Street.
The spirit of performance defines Acura. And now it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own.
With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura has been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.